of course, when I see deals are available, is I had to look through like probably like 500 different deals before I could like find like one that actually made sense, because 99% of them like are not, don't make sense as far as like numbers goes. But like when they do make sense, they like jump on it quickly and then like just get calling in.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Nathan with Undoor Properties, and I am one of five hosts, your Monday hosts, who bring you conversations three times a week on a variety of topics around real estate, business, and personal motivation. And our goal with this podcast is to help you succeed in whatever target you're aiming at. We're all committed to finding the best and the brightest people who aren't just talking about doing big things, but are actually taking the steps to achieve their dreams and wanting to help others along the way. And today, one of my favorite Instagram follows, Daniel Kong, is with us to talk about all the success he's found in remote real estate investing, investing in Indianapolis from Hawaii, going into commercial real estate investing, burring in Hawaii, and many, many other success stories. So with that, why don't we hop into the conversation? Hey, Daniel, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. You know, I'm super excited to hear all about your background. One of my favorite follows on Instagram, and you always do, you seemingly at least, always do super interesting things that touch on a lot of different aspects of success in real estate in general. So I'm excited to hop into this conversation. So, to kick us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you found success, and what you do in life?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a real estate investor out of Honolulu, Hawaii. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2018, kind of started the whole journey. I was working as a software developer at the time. And then like after I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, it blew my mind, the whole idea of like passive income and real estate investing. Started kind of diving down a rabbit hole of real estate investing with, started out of state actually in Indianapolis. And then started eventually transitioning over to Hawaii in about 3 years, built up a small portfolio that replaced my income as a software developer. And then out from there, just continuing to snowball, like fix and flip. Now we're trying to buy commercial properties and just kind of like evolve as an investor and as an entrepreneur.
Before we jump into the show, we wanted to let you know that this episode is brought to you by EveryREITool.com. Every REI tool is the most comprehensive online catalog of resources for real estate investors and professionals. Whether you are looking for the best deal analyzer, the most loved syndication platform, fix and flip rehab calculators, dialers, lead generation solutions, rent collectors, or the next real estate book to read, every REI tool has it all. Quickly and easily find the best software, apps, services, books, podcasts, and courses to help accelerate and grow your real estate business by heading over to everyreitool.com. And don't forget to sign up to get exclusive product reviews, promos, and discount codes. Everyreitool.com. Now, on to the show.
Very cool. I'm curious to hear, because this is always something that, or at least in my experience in these conversations, can be contentious with people. But you said you started in Indianapolis from Honolulu. So how'd you pick that market? Why'd you decide to go that far away from you are? Isn't that like hard and too hard to do and too scary to do? How'd you get started there? I'm curious to hear that part of the story.
Well, when I first started, I didn't have any money. So I thought like the Hawaii was too expensive for me to like to play in because the price points are so high. And so like I think the median price point of a single family home in Hawaii right now is like $1.1 million. And so like it's not even anything close to like what I thought I could play in. And then also like it's not known as a cash flow state. And my whole goal is to get cash flow to like exit my W-2. So I just I didn't even consider Hawaii as a feasible market for like cash flow or for like for buying rental properties. And so what I actually did was, coming from a software background, is I wrote a script that scraped like turnkey websites on the web. And so like basically it visits all the turnkey websites and like we'll script them and put them into like a like little mini database. And I wrote like kind of like a formula to calculate cash flow based on like property taxes, insurance, et cetera, and rent. And so like I scraped like as like thousands of like turnkey sites and put them into like little mini database. And then on average, there's certain like markets that just cash flow better. I think there's like Oklahoma City, Memphis, I think Florida, certain parts of Florida, and then Kansas City and Indianapolis, like the there's a few markets that kind of rose to the top as far as like on average, they just cash flowed as better, like rentals just off the bat. And so from there, I was like, okay, like these are the markets I want to kind of like start looking into more. And then from there, I just like doing more research on like, I think Indianapolis and Oklahoma City and Kansas City were kind of my top ones. Then like Indianapolis just had like a lot of like things that made sense. Like it was like a kind of centrally located. There's a lot of like cities near it. There was like the population was growing. There was like a wide economic drivers. You got like the Pacers, the Colts, 8500. You got like Salesforce, a whole bunch of other things. And just in general, like it's like a red state, so landlord friendly. There's a lot of things that just overall made Indy like a really good place to like invest, also for cash flow, but also like as an investor. So doing after that, like just like let's pick a market and just kind of start diving deep into like into Indianapolis. So that's how I start. I'll start.
Can you say a little bit more maybe about what it means to dive deeper once you've selected that market, right? You just said I started to dive a bit deeper. What does that mean for you and those who have never done this before and might want to do something similar?
So honestly, like when I first started, there was a few books that was really like helped me kind of start my journey. Obviously, Rich Dad Poor Dad was kind of like started with like the mindset. But another book that I read recently after was called Long Distance Real Estate Investing by David Green. And I literally just like whatever he wrote inside his books, I just followed like the game plan, like page to page. And so like contacting agents in the area and like looking on Zillow to like using like Zillow and Redfin to kind of like understand the neighborhoods. And just kind of like from afar, kind of like walk the neighborhoods like with street view or just kind of understand like how the pricing works from like on this zip code to zip code, et cetera. It's like the deep diving just means like understanding the neighborhoods, the rents, the types of like, houses and the kind of things that you're going to run into when you're in those, in the Indianapolis neighborhood. So just the more I know about like the city, whatever I could read up on the city, the population, whatever, just trying to like really like go a mile deep into the Indianapolis market to just understand like the little nuances of the neighborhoods and how like how the market works over there.
And then for when you decided to pull the trigger on your first property, what was that like? Did you fly out there to meet your agent and walk the property and buy the first property? Or did you find it on like a turnkey provider website that you mentioned? Or was it just something you found on Zillow? What was that first purchase like?
Actually, the first one was like, so I bought all my properties pretty much from wholesalers. And so like at the time it was like, hey, you want to get a good deal? Like the wholesalers are at the time, I think they still are a great opportunity or a great avenue for finding like undermarket or underpriced properties. Obviously some of them might need like some renovations, but that's exactly what I was looking for in the buyer strategy. And so I just like, I got into as many wholesaler lists as I could. Like I joined like Facebook groups. You just Google like Summer House Fast Indianapolis and like the first 30 results that show up, like you're like, hey, can you add me to your buyers list? I'm just trying to get as many buyers lists as I can. I just started underwriting and evaluating like deals that came into my inbox from the different wholesalers. Every day I think I get like 10 different deals from different wholesalers, like from the market, and then just try to underwrite them until like a deal kind of made sense numbers wise. And then from there, then I'll call the agents or call like the boots on the ground and say, hey, what are your opinion of this neighborhood? What do you think about, is this a fair price, a fair ARV or a fair rent that like these guys are saying that we can get, et cetera. And so like once like it was just like underwriting, like analyzing like hundreds of deals through like wholesaler lists.
Yeah, awesome. And then when you bought the first one, it was just straight from the wholesaler, or did you fly out there to go, you know, check out these properties?
No, it was just straight from the wholesaler. It was actually a little scary because I mean, so I didn't have money when I started. So like the way that I got money was I went to like my local banks where I live, and there's this thing called a personal line of credit you can take out, where like you can get a unsecured loan or line of credit based on like your credit score and just like your W-2 income. So it's not secured against any asset, but the local bank will give you between like 15 to like 30 grand in just an unsecured line of credit. And so like I went to like five different banks in my area like on one day and just like applied for like a bunch of like lines of credit. I got like five different lines, like 15, 20, 25, et cetera. So like overall, I got like maybe like 110 like in 10,000 and just lines of credit that I had access to. And from there, I pulled those lines to purchase the first house in Indianapolis, which is like $70,000. And so like, that was like the first start of like the whole journey right there.
And then did you complete, because you mentioned BRRRR earlier, buy, rehab, rent, refi, repeat, right? For those who don't know, but did you execute the full BRRRR on that first property before you moved on to the second one, third one, or however many you're at now? Or what was that step like?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I feel like every year, like, I think like when I first started the journey, I was talking to other guys who were invested in the same market, and they're telling me some of the deals that they were finding, like buying a house for 25 grand or something. And now it's worth like 150. I was like, These are insane. So when I first started, I was like, shucks, like I missed the market. I missed the timing because I started in 2019. So like, I think from 2012 to like 2018, it was like a gold rush. It was like dirt cheap properties and they're appreciating like crazy. So I was like, okay, I'm too late, but I'm just going to try my best. But actually like now looking at what's on the market now or below now, I'm like, wow, those 2019s were actually pretty good. And so found the property in Indianapolis. That first deal was 100% burr. We bought it for $70,000. We put a $30,000 renovation into it. It appraised for $140,000. And so we cashed out, refi 75%, which is $105,000. It rented for $1,000 and my mortgage was like a little over $700,000. So that was like the very first burr deal to kind of get it kicked started on to start the whole process.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome home run burr for your first one. That's awesome. What was it like for like maybe property number two, or did you just look for the same for a while, or what was the next phase of your real estate investing journey after you did this first one?
Yeah, I mean, actually like all six that I did, like, so we did six in 2019, all six of them were very similar where like we got either like 100%, close to 100% or more than 100% of our money back in the 75% like cash out refinance. So like, I think just like the market was going up a little bit, and then just like where there's just like deals were available. Of course, when I say deals are available, is I had to look through like probably like 500 different deals before I could like find like one that actually made sense, because 99% of them like don't make sense as far as like numbers goes. But like when they do make sense, then like jump on it quickly and then like to just get going in the different burr rentals that we were doing that year. So
and how are you still doing that today? Like the burrs of single family homes. I'm asking simply because earlier you mentioned, you know, doing some flipping, right? Some looking into commercial now. I think you have some, you know, short terms in Hawaii as well. I'm just curious to hear when you decided to pivot and maybe why you decided to pivot.
So that first year, like when I was starting investing in 2019, I was like, hey, like a burring, like the whole strategy is easy. I thought like, you know, like it's like Indianapolis, you buy this, you fix it up. But then the one drawback was that I only had like 100. So I had like a little over 100 for my lines of credit. And then I had like, I took a loan against my 401k. So like you can take a loan against your 401k with no penalty. Like if you withdraw it early, like you have to pay like taxes and like these fees, whatever. But like if you take a loan against it, I think the max you can take is like 50% or 50K, whichever is less. So I took like a 50K, like, so I had like basically 100 something from lines of credit and another 50 from my 401K. And that was the money I was using to like, to go through these burr strategies. But you have to wait for the money to come back before you can kind of do the next one, right? So like, I had a system going, like, it was like, I felt like it was too slow because I could do like five or six a year, but I only had like that same 150 to keep on recycling. So my thought was, let's take this skill set that I'm like, I kind of like have over here in Indianapolis. Let's apply it to my local market, start fixing and flipping. Let's say I can make $100,000, $200,000. Now I have like $250,000 or $350,000 and I can recycle those. Now I can do like 20 or 30 like burrs a year with like with a bigger chunk of change versus like just the 150 that I had, like, you know. So that was the initial thought when I was like, hey, let's take this skill set. I got some confidence from playing the indie market, try it in the Hawaii market flipping, to apply, make cash, and then apply to the indie market.
And was it easy to get into the Hawaii market? Or was it, because it sounded like the median price point you were saying was 1.1 mil or something like that. And I mean, obviously you need a lot of cash to get into those, right? But it sounds like you were able to do it. So what was that like?
It was a big challenge. I mean, like I feel like in Indianapolis, like they're a lot easier to find deals because like there's like the price points are smaller. There's just more deals available. But in Hawaii, they're just like less deals available. So we don't really have wholesalers in Hawaii. Like pretty much you have to find your own deals. And so like I started marketing my own, spend money, like learning like we didn't do band size, but we did like cold calling, texting, like, you know, and trying to do like mailers, some like website stuff. And so like, you kind of had to like market your own to find your own deals. And so like it was a kind of like a big, I think it like took 4 or 5 months before we actually got our first deal in Hawaii after like all the marketing and the effort that we put inside there. But like eventually it got very lucky. Like the first like 3 deals we did were actually burrs in Hawaii, which is kind of rare on average because like typically like you need to buy at a certain price point and the exit like to cash on the back end. So we got very lucky in the first few deals in Hawaii where actually ending up burring those first few deals in Hawaii and keeping them. And then the cash flow is actually pretty incredible. And so like that kind of was like a jump started like my journey because I was able to like kind of get some home run deals in Hawaii, which were burr properties. And then from there, just kind of things were kind of snowballing from there. So
And you mentioned commercial properties earlier as well. What's the thinking there?
So like when you're doing like fix and flipping or any kind of like real estate where it's very lucrative, but it's also like high taxable because it's the active income, right? So like when you fix and flip, it's like a W-2 where you're paying it's constant active income, right? So like one of the ways is you want to try and shield your active income with like depreciation from rental properties. But then if you buy a $1 million house in Hawaii, then $800,000 is land and only $200,000 is the house. So you have a very small house for $1 million in Hawaii, which means you have a little bit of depreciation and very little cash flow. You take that same $1 million and you put it into Kansas City, for instance. Now you have only $100,000 in land, so very cheap land, but now you have a $900,000 building. So you have way more building, which means way more cash flow and also way more depreciation. And so if when we're trying to buy bigger assets in Kansas City, the single family houses are maybe $150,000, $200,000, but you kind of need a bigger building or something to be able to look for the bigger prices. And that's where the commercial kind of comes in, where you can buy these bigger assets that are cash flow pretty well, but also they can give you big tax savings. So on $1 million purchase in Kansas City as a commercial property, year one, you can take a $300,000 loss on your depreciation using a cost segregation and a bonus depreciation. So it's kind of a good way for us to get cash flow, but also to get tax savings against the active income that we're doing in Hawaii for our fix and flipping.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously with all these things that you're working on and have worked on in the past, you've found a bunch of success so far. What I'm curious to hear from you, what your definition of success is today, maybe what that means for you and maybe what it was before. I'm curious if it was, when you started, maybe it was to, go up the ranks in your software engineer career and end up being, a top dog at some company. And now it's different. How did that definition of success change for you over time?
You know, it's funny, I feel like my world is completely different than it was 3 or 4 years ago. My view of what reality is completely different. When I remember when I was first starting out, so I was living in the basement, Hawaii is very expensive, and so I was I never thought I would ever own my own house. It was I was making just shy of six figures, but I was if I can just make six figures, I feel like I made it in life. If I can make $100,000 at my W-2, that's all I ever wanted in my life. Cause the goal of six figures, I was I would never be able to afford a house, so I'm fine renting for the rest of my life and kind of getting by with just living in Hawaii. And so that was kind of where my mindset was in the beginning. Just if I could just make six figures in my job, I'd be super stoked. And so that was success for me in the beginning. But my first goal was hey, we can make $5,000 a month in passive income to supplement my W-2. That would be awesome. That was kind of my first goal. And so success slowly changed over time. In the beginning, it was let's take 5,000. Then we actually hit that mark. I was wow, this is amazing. I'm crushing it. Or I'm super doing super lucky. Let's try the next goal, which would be maybe 10,000 a month in passive income, right? Then we hit that goal, and then the goalposts kept moving forward as you kind of hit them. And it's fun to hit your goals, but also it's your view of what you believe is possible. It changes. And I feel real estate is one of those few vehicles where a normal everyday person like myself with no experience or no rich friends or no real education on the real estate side, we actually can build wealth in a relatively short period of time, and also opens up kind of the possibilities for us. And so a lot of my contemporaries, my friends who are flippers or who are investors now, we kind of grew our real estate ranks together. We started in 2019 or 2018, and now I see they're all multimillionaires. And so what you think is a success, the bar constantly keeps on getting higher and higher. And so I think what it was back then versus what is now is very different. But I feel the whole time, even when I was working on my W-2, I'm just barely kind of just getting by in Hawaii, I still feel very lucky. I think I've always felt grateful just living in America. I think just having good food, good friends, good health. I think even if we didn't ever reach financial freedom, I was to be still be super stoked, just happy. And having health and friends and enough to live and get by, I feel to me is success. So at the end of the day.
I love it. And I guess to segue off of that and all the things that you shared with us so far, right? What's your favorite success story that you like to share with people? Is it reaching financial freedom? Is it taking the leap? Is it just seemingly mentally in a good place, right? I'm curious to hear what your favorite success story is.
I think for me, financial freedom definitely was the biggest milestone. And just the whole concept of it, like when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, the whole idea of financial freedom just like blew my mind. Like, it's almost like you discover like fire for the first time. You know, like people can do this. Like, you know, like it was never really like a remote thought in my mind. Like, you know, like just like get a job. I went straight from college into like the workforce, and like I never even thought the idea of passive income existed. And so like just like when the idea like exists, I was like, wow, like people can do this. And then to actually have done it in like after a few years of like investing in real estate, like to me that was like a big point in my career, in my life, where I was like, I feel like I made it, like, you know, just like the financial freedom, and then like being able to like leave my job and like live off the passive income from rental properties. Like, I feel like that was like the biggest, I guess, like success story, if you would call it, in like my from me myself personally.
Yeah, I love it. Well, congrats on that, because yeah, obviously you've found success in many aspects of your life, and it's always great to hear these stories. But they can't always, or they can't all be that, you know, unicorns and rainbows and, you know, ponies and all that. How about like hard times? Do you have any hard times that you like to share with people, and kind of what you went through, what your mindset was to get out of those and continue to work towards your goals?
Also, like I think I was kind of maybe like arrogant or comfortable. I think we've been in a bull run for like a long period of time, right? So like even people who are buying like bad deals, they're still coming out positive just because the market was saving them. And so I think for like the majority of my, when I started in 2019 till like 2022, it's kind of been like so COVID was like a small scare, but then from there I just went straight up afterwards, right? So everything I touched was like turned to gold, and I was like, yeah, I'm a great investor. But honestly, partly it was like just because the market was like, everybody was like couldn't lose at that point in time, you know. So this past year, actually, we, it was humbling, we took our very first loss on a fix and flip. And so like it was like our first loss as an investor. So I think that was very humbling. I think we lost like $80,000 on that deal. So like it's not like a small chunk of bunch of change, but it was like something relatively significant considering like the market and everything, you know. So like that this past year would be like the maybe like the most challenging as far as like losses goes, as far as like financially. And but then throughout the whole process, like you're grinding, you're trying to like figure things out. And so like while I was working my W-2 in like the 40 hours a week, I spent like 80 hours a week trying to do like real estate and investing on the side. So like I think the whole thing process was like it was a real grind. And the thing about real estate is you work in the beginning, and there's like zero results, yeah, because like there's so much like knowledge debt and so much foundational things that you have to kind of like learn and like put into and to like to get over the hump to get your first deal, that it's a long time of like learning, educating, networking, and like trying and failing before you actually see like any kind of success. And so I think the beginning grind was also like a big part of like the some of the struggles that was like for big in the throughout the course of the career.
And what'd you learn, I guess, from that 80 grand loss loss? Yeah. Is there anything you're doing differently now? And how come it didn't just stop you altogether from pursuing real estate or continuing real estate?
Well, like we're lucky where we had like a bull run before that, where we had enough like income and like savings and things where we could stomach a loss like that. But I think each deal I feel like has like its own like lessons learned. Like this one was, We estimated the ARV wrong based on a few things on the property. We took our eye off the ball. We had too much projects going on at the time. So like there was like some lacks as far as like project management and like keeping track of our contractors. There's some things with like trying to like working with our realtor to make sure like certain things are correct. And so like there's a lot of little small subtle things that like we're just like in the future, like you're constantly getting better and refining your processes and like your strategy. So I think like there's a lot of small takeaways from that. But the big thing is also just to be conservative with your ARVs and just like keep your eye on the ball and like don't get too comfortable or like too don't get too arrogant or too like, I guess, like think that
complacent.
Things can't go wrong, because they can't. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because then they can't go like wrong in a hurry, especially like in a high like dollar thing like real estate. So
yeah, for sure. And if you could go back in time to when you were younger, knowing what you know now and having achieved what you've achieved now, what would you do differently?
I mean, it's probably the same thing like a lot of people would say. It's just, I wish I started this when I was like younger, right? So, like if I was 15 or 16, 17, 18, it would be like such a game changer. I just wish, so they say, well, like I think the proverb is like, the best time to plant a tree was like 20 years ago, right? And then the next best time is today. And so like, just like, if I could go back and do everything that I learned like now earlier, like I wish I started this earlier. other than that, I think just like in the beginning, I was like super like lone wolf, where like just like keeping my head down and learning, kind of doing everything by myself. But I think like if I was to try retrace my steps, I think joining like networking circles or maybe a coaching program or something to kind of accelerate my growth would have been like really, really helpful like during that time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And earlier you said you, to quote yourself, right, you said you're just a normal guy and you've achieved all of this, right? Being, quote, just a normal guy, what do you think your secret sauce is or your key to success is?
So I think like number one is like the vehicle of real estate investing by itself is like crazy. I think Warren Buffett had like this crazy story where he said like him and a buddy, like they both graduated from school together, like, and his buddy was just as smart, just as driven as him, right? And so after graduation, the guy went into like the steel business and he did marginally well. Warren Buffett is like a billionaire, right? And so like what he realized was like, it's not just like the boat that it's not how hard you roll, but it's also the boat that you're rowing. Like, you know, so I think real estate investing in general, it just was like, I got lucky as far as like, it was like taking off like during that bull run, and the boat that we're in just allows us to have this kind of success. And I think like my quote unquote superpower is like, I get obsessed with things. So I think like when I was doing like my W-2 and when I found real estate, I was obsessed with it, where like I'd like 8 hours a week of just like learning, like I'm like just like trying to find deals, et cetera. So like, I was just like so focused and lasered in. I think when you're focused on like, one track minded, it'll accelerate your timeline. So I think like, if I wasn't like that, I'd get to the point where I was now maybe like in 10 years, but because I was like so focused, it's like 3 or 4x times what the kind of effort you put in. So I think that's why it only took me 3 years, because I was like so focused and like the obsessed with it during like that 3 year period.
And I guess related to that, for those who are looking to get started and maybe looking to get focused, right? What would you say, what one action would you tell like the audience and people looking to get started to do?
I think the big thing is like, you have to shorten the timeline between learning and application. So I think a lot of times it's very common to like, you want to like learn, apply, learn, apply. I say like, learn, apply. As soon as you learn something, just start putting to practice and see what you can do. Like, read, like for instance, read a book on the book on long distance real estate investing by David Green. As soon as the chapter finishes, do everything that the chapter talks about. Like, okay, contact the agents, do whatever. And so I think the shorter that you can shorten like the timeline between like learning and application, the faster or more success you're gonna be. Cause you kind of need to like take action and see, like get some feedback and then readjust, get some feedback and readjust. But it takes those continuous action steps to really kind of move the ball forward. If you spend too much time like learning and then not like acting, number one, like you lose motivation, because like it's they call it, I think, the law of diminishing intent, where like the longer it takes for you to like to do something, then like the less likely you are to do it, and you'll have like less like motivation to do it. So like, if you can just learn something, apply it, then you have that start that loop of just like action faster, that'll really help you to kind of supercharge or make sure that you're moving the ball down the field for towards your goals.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think I was one of those for a while where I think we probably spent, I can't remember at this point, but 6 months, maybe a year, quote, learning, right? Podcast, books, talking to people, reading, you know, researching all this stuff, and finally took the leap, bought the first property a few years ago. And I think the second one after that came 3 weeks later, because it was the act of taking action and going through it and learning and experiencing that transaction, the purchase essentially, that unlocked almost everything. And went from 1 to 2 to 3 to 6 to, you know, whatever it is now in a very short amount of time.
They say there's real estate investors who have done 0 deals, and there's real estate investors who have like 10 deals. There's never a real estate investor who just does one and stop. There's always like, once you get that first one, like the ball gets rolling, you start to snowball. So like it just goes to show you like that first deal, like it's so important to kind of like start your journey. Like just do that first one to kind of like get the whole ball rolling.
Absolutely. Well, Daniel, I want to make sure we are respectful of your time here and start getting you out of here. We like to always ask our guests, you know, towards the end of the conversation here for a book recommendation. You mentioned a couple already. Is there anything else you want to mention?
So Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I think like the I'll say Long Distance Real Estate Investing by David Green made a big impact in my life when I was first starting. So I think like that's a huge one to kind of get over the fear that you can't invest like from like thousands of miles away, where like this guy, he literally like lays out the blueprint or the playbook to do it. And so like all you got to do is just, why reinvent the wheel? Just like look at what this other guy already did and just kind of follow his game plan or his blueprint. So I'd highly recommend Long Distance Real Estate Investing by David Green.
Yeah, it's I have it on my shelf over there. Actually, it's one of my favorite reads. It's a very, very good book. I also highly recommend it. How about a piece of software, an app, a tool that you use on a regular basis that's helped you achieve success?
I think one thing that I use daily is Trello. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. Basically, it's like a they call it a Kanban board where you can put things into like different kind of like columns or lists. And it's something that I use daily because like it's seamless between my computer and my phone. And I read this book. It's called like Getting Things Done by I forgot the guy's name, but like basically it's a an ideology of how to get things done like more efficiently and like so like the whole idea is like there's a lot of like jumble that's going on in your brain at all points in time, right? And so like if you can like clear the clutter and just put it on paper and like clear up the headspace, you can move things down forward faster. So anytime you get like an idea, you like, immediately dump it from your brain into like this thing called like your inbox. So that's your first list. And like by doing that, like you clear your space so you can like kind of focus on the task you're working on, et cetera. But like it's a kind of like an ideology to kind of like make sure that like tasks are getting completed, that you're moving them along the board of like but they're being monitored, et cetera. And so like the Trello is something that we use for like for our team for task mount like task list and also for myself personally, just to get things out of my head onto paper or quote unquote like electronic paper, whatever that is. And then also to help me to like keep track of like my daily task and things like the like projects that I'm working on. So Trello.
Yep, I use Trello every single day, and my wife laughs at me when I tell her on a regular basis that I actually try to not remember everything that I possibly can. And by that, I mean every chance I get, I'll put it down in Trello or reminders on my phone or a Google Doc or whatever, so that I don't have to keep it in my brain. So yeah, Trello is an awesome tool.
Yeah, we're on the same page with that for sure. Yeah, awesome.
Awesome, Daniel. Well, last question here, and then I'll let you go. How can our audience reach out to you, and how can they help you?
You can reach out to me on Daniel Kong 808 on Instagram or on like any of the socials and helping me. I mean, like we're always looking for deals. We're always looking for money. So if you got either of those or you want to partner, and we always like partnering too. So like if you want to partner on something or if even if you need advice, we like to like give advice to like newer up and coming investors. So reach out. The best way is probably get a DM on Instagram. So like the maybe if you follow. Or like leave us a comment on our Instagram or our YouTube. That would actually really, really help us too. But basically just reach out, let's connect, let's see how we can help each other grow as investors and like the and this journey of like passive investing.
Yep. Daniel Kong 808 on all social, one of my favorite follows, an awesome follow, always great information and tips and tricks on there. So I would recommend everyone reach out and follow and connect with you. Daniel, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you and you being here, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon. Sorry to hear more about your success.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Nathan.
All right, take care. Thanks for joining us and be a part of our conversation today with Daniel Kong. We've gathered all the important links from today's show and put them in the handy show notes below, so make sure to check them out. And of course, as always, if you found any value in the content today, please consider subscribing, leaving a comment, following us on the various social media, as well as YouTube. And we look forward to hosting you again next time.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.